A payroll tax cut deal, a new federal budget plan, the president visits Milwaukee, a surprising twist in the legislation to streamline mining legislation in Wisconsin, and a panel of federal judges say shame to Republican lawmakers for secrecy in the redistricting process. Just some of the issues we will cover during this edition of The Week in Review. Good morning, I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 8 minutes past 8 o'clock on this Friday, February the 17th. We have two guests with us from different political perspectives, and we welcome your input, too, on the topics we cover. 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Let me welcome our guests. Keene Winters is with us. He's a financial planner in Schofield and coordinator of the Center-Right Coalition of WASA. Good morning.
Good morning.
And Tony Palmieri is also with us, professor of communication at UW Oshkosh, media columnist for the Scene newspaper in the Fox Valley. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Joy. Good morning, Keene.
Well, let me start with the NPR news story that we just heard that there is going to be a vote today on the payroll tax cut extension. Congress is getting ready to vote on extending the payroll tax cut and jobless benefits for people who are out of work. It said that passage is nearly certain in the House, but it's likely in the Senate, but there is a lot more debate going on. It's not as assured in the Senate. Some Democratic senators are defecting because of cuts in federal workers' pensions and some other issues. Some Republicans are opposed because the bill will add $89 billion to the federal deficit over the next decade. Tony, what are your thoughts on the payroll tax cut extension?
Ultimately, it will pass because neither of the major parties want to go into the November elections raising the tax on the 99%. But it's interesting. The Republican Party, in previous discussions of this, have tied it up for long periods of time, holding out for cuts, supposedly to pay for the tax cuts. And this time in the House, they've not held out for that. So, again, the only thing that's really changed is the fact that there's an election coming up. But I do think that this will pass in the Senate. But at some point down the road, the United States Congress and the president are going to have to deal with the issue of these tax cuts and the Bush-era tax cuts and whether to put them together in one package.
Mm-hmm. Do you agree, Keene?
I agree with Tony that I think it's going to pass. I think the die was already cast because to have sort of a mid-year tax hike, for those of us who are in business and calculate withholdings, it's a huge mess, and nobody wants to go there. So I think that makes it a done deal. I also think Tony's right that really the long-term implications here are at some point we've got to take this tax back to where it was to fund Social Security, and nobody's seeming willing to deal with that. And I just one editorial comment on this is though I like this model of a tax cut. I wish we'd used this with the original $800 billion stimulus package instead of just pouring that into larger government.
Well, let me ask you, Keene, just to react to the President Obama's budget plan that he unveiled earlier this week.
Well, to me, it's a disappointment. I think what your person wants in a president is leadership and leadership on the big issues. And the big issues of the day are growing entitlement costs and growing size of government. And we really have done very little at all to address those kinds of things. If you look at specific pieces of the bill, it's really just retread. So let's have economic stimulus, but let's do this. We'll build more highways and we'll hire more teachers. And we've sort of been down that road before, hiring more teachers or government workers increases the size of government. I get a little bit jaded about highway projects. We just had an expose by the newspaper here at WASA about the Highway 29 bypass, which we all love up here, but it was supposed to cost $153 million. It turned out costing $308 million. And kudos to the Wausau Daily Herald for bringing all that to light. And you say, really, is that the best way to stimulate the economy? How about just giving us some tax breaks here and letting people use the money the way they need to, and growing jobs that way?
Tony?
Well, Joy, you asked about the president's budget, which probably has no chance of passing this Congress. And you have to ask yourself why. As with the president's previous budgets, it asks for an end to those Bush-era tax cuts on the wealthiest Americans. And the Republican Party will not budge on that. And at the same time, they claim they want to reduce deficits. You're not going to have massive reductions in deficits as long as you keep those Bush-era tax cuts in place. So the issue is going to be, will the president continue to fight to end those tax cuts along with other subsidies of companies that don't need the breaks, or will he cave? And will the Republican Party start to be more responsible and end this nonstop allegiance to the 1%? The majority, overwhelming majority of Americans in poll after poll want to see the tax breaks for the 1% ended. The only people who seem to disagree with that are the Republicans in the U.S. Congress. Mm-hmm. So it seems to me if we're going to make progress on the federal budget, it's really in the court of the Republican Party to budge and end this allegiance to the top 1%.
Mm-hmm. Keen.
Well, I understand the sort of the Grover Norquist position on these tax cuts, and that is every time that we have agreed to raising taxes, we've grown the size of government. And I think if there would be a way to either agree on capping the size of government, that you could find a way to have some more equitable taxes. And to be quite honest, Tony, I think probably as a financial planner, when I look at the capital gains rate and what that does, well, it's something we need to revisit, because you have in this country essentially two ways of making a living, either by making something and being taxed as a corporation at 35%, or by trading something and being taxed at 15%. And guess what? You get more traders and less makers. And that's probably something we ought to think about, but I'm unwilling to go forward unless I have some guarantees that we're not going to grow the federal government beyond the 25% of GDP that it is today.
Let's talk a little bit about the president in his budget address did talk about, actually it was in his State of the Union address, talked about companies that are beginning to bring jobs back from overseas and changing tax policies to reward companies that do that. And he visited one of those companies, Master Lock, in Milwaukee this week. Tony, is that something, are we going to see more of this?
Well, the phrase that is being used is insourcing, I guess, bringing jobs back to the United States. And the president, of course, wants to provide some tax breaks for companies that do that, as opposed to breaks for companies that take jobs out of the country. But, of course, this is a political trip. This is a re-election year. The president won Wisconsin by 14 points in 2008. He obviously needs to win Wisconsin again in 2012. He needs to regain that spark. I mean, 2008, of course, was this grassroots-type campaign. He was firing people up all over the country and in the state of Wisconsin. I think in Milwaukee, it was an attempt to see is the fire still there. And it did seem like a good amount of people turned out for him. I mean, some of us, myself included, were a little bit disappointed that throughout 2011, throughout the whole movement in Wisconsin, the recall movements and so on, the president was silent. And he continues to be silent on that, which is disappointing. But, I mean, I guess his staff are making this political calculation. They don't want to say anything that might possibly harm them in November, which I find kind of odd, because we have over a million signatures to recall our governor. I don't know why anyone in the Obama administration would think it's a losing proposition for him to openly support what the working people of Wisconsin are doing right now.
Yeah. Well, we'll talk. We will talk more about some of the state issues as well. But Keen, I guess a react to the president visiting Master Lock in Milwaukee this week. Is that company a shining star? Something?
Well, I think it is 100 jobs, and we'll take jobs wherever we can get them. We'll take jobs in the collaborative consulting up here in Wausau as well. But in many ways, I'd just like to see more leadership and less demagoguery. One of the president's statements that he made during the campaign that he continues to repeat is we have to stop rewarding companies that ship jobs overseas and start rewarding companies that create jobs in this country. Well, first of all, nobody is rewarding companies for sending jobs overseas. And the notion that government should be giving tax breaks to companies, is a warning sign. It tells us probably if we have to give tax breaks like we did to collaborative consulting to come to Wausau, we gave a couple $1 million at the state level, $250,000 at the local level, then we ought to be rethinking our whole overall level of taxation if that's what we have to do to attract jobs.
I wanted to ask you, Tony, given that you are the media columnist for the Scene newspaper, to react to the mistake by the Politico reporter yesterday. I don't know if you saw that or not, but a reporter for Politico took a picture of and reported that that President Obama was siding with the local union at Master Lock, and you could tell because the local union's flag was flying prominently. It was Wisconsin 1848, which was the state flag. The political reporter thought the state flag was the local union flag.
I did not see that. But the idea that it would somehow be bad if President Obama was somehow siding with the union, I mean, really, who should President Barack Obama be siding with in the state of Wisconsin right now? Throughout Wisconsin in the last year, we've seen this unprecedented uprising, with people supporting the rights of people to collectively bargain, to unionize. It's in the Democratic Party platform. So the idea that a Democratic president would somehow, be too bashful to stand behind a union flag or with a union flag is shocking. It also doesn't surprise me that Politico would make some mistakes. I mean, they have a history of that.
Yeah. Well, it was deleted or taken down quickly. And, Keen, there were Governor Walker said he had the flu and did not accompany the president at Master Lock, but he did greet him at the airport. And there was no airport moment like what occurred when the president and the governor in Arizona got together. Any comment on that?
No, I don't see very much in that. I mean, I think Walker was wise to avoid a kiss from Obama, and Obama, if he had the flu, was wise to avoid a kiss from Walker.
All right. Well, we're gonna we'll talk about more state and national issues and international issues as well as we are reviewing the news of the week with two guests from different perspectives. Today, we are talking with Keen Winters, who is coordinator of the Center-Right Coalition of Wausau, also a financial planner in Schofield, and Tony Palmieri, who is a professor of communication at UW-Oshkosh and media columnist for the Scene newspaper. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, hoping you'll stay tuned. Coming up this afternoon, it's your views on the news after 4 o'clock every Friday. Ben Marins and his guest talk about the top news stories of the week and welcome you to join in with your views on the news. That's after 4 this afternoon. We're reviewing the top state, national, and international political news stories of the week with our two guests, Keen Winters and Tony Palmieri. And we welcome your input, and we welcome the issues from the news this week that you want to talk about. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Let's stick with some national issues and talk some about talk some about this this flap over religious liberty and contraception and insurance coverage. There was a hearing yesterday over this issue as to whether whether a religious organization can be mandated to provide insurance coverage for things that the church teaches against, like contraception. Yesterday, there were all men apparently speaking at this particular hearing, and the women, the congresswomen, walked out of this hearing because apparently there was a refusal to allow a woman to testify. Tony Palmieri, what's your impression of this issue?
Well, it's interesting that the Catholic hierarchy and the Republican leaders in the Congress, you know, seem to be framing this as an issue of religious conscience and what have you, when it seems like the majority of Catholics in surveys claim that they agree with the Obama administration, both on its original plan and on the compromise that they've proposed. So it seems like average, everyday Catholics, people of conscience, want to have the right to make their own choice whether to use contraception and then have it covered in an insurance plan. So the idea that the Catholic hierarchy or the Republican leaders in the Congress are somehow speaking for either Catholics, a narrow group, or the American people in general, I just find that just absurd. You know, as a Catholic myself, I find it offensive that the Catholic bishops or the Republican Party would try to dictate to me how I should think about a certain issue. So I think the majority of people are on the side of the Obama administration on this one.
Keen?
Well, I think it was a huge political mistake, but I think a very revealing political mistake by the Obama administration. In order to pass the health care legislation, they explicitly promised the bishops as well as Catholics that as we would move forward to a national health care system, that they would not impose their views on issues like birth control and abortion. In fact, the UP's representative, Bart Stupak, only signed on and made that health care legislation possible because he got explicit promises from the president on those issues. And shortly after that, the president, of course, abandons those. And it reminds me of a conversation we had at Center Right Coalition. We had Senator Ron Johnson back in August, fresh from the debate over the debt ceiling. And his point that he talked about at length is that this president is not someone you can do a deal with or compromise, because essentially what he wants his way, only his way. And when you saw this compromise, I mean, that was announced, which said instead of requiring the institutions to buy health insurance that includes birth control, what we'll just do is require the health insurers to provide the birth control free, which is essentially a semantic game. It tells you if you make a deal with this guy, you're dealing with the devil. He's going to undercut you later and just do things his own way. And I think until we have a different president, we're not going to have a Washington where compromises are possible. This issue really underscores that level of leadership that we're getting from the president.
But Keen, who is really imposing their views here? You've got the Catholic bishops and I guess some of the Republican leaders in the Congress who want their views on birth control to be imposed on everyone. I mean, don't people, workers in these institutions, shouldn't they have the freedom to make a decision on how they want to approach birth control without having a bishop or a Republican senator make that decision for them?
Well, Tony, I agree with you. People ought to have the freedom, but let's talk about what we're really talking about here is nobody's talking about taking away your freedom or access to birth control. We're saying the question is whether, as a working person, you should receive your birth control for free or not. And so no one's taking away the access to birth control, but we are talking about asking religious institutions to financially support something that they teach against. And that's a question of religious freedom. No one's talking about banning birth control. And what you're essentially saying is birth control ought to be free to everyone. And why should working people necessarily have to have that free if they work for a Catholic institution?
Totally.
They have the choice. They can buy it on their own.
Christian ministers, Catholic, others are free to go into their congregations and urge their flock, if you will, not to use birth control. But the ultimate choice on whether to do that rests with the person.
I agree.
Now the moment the government says, okay, these items will be covered in insurance plans, but this won't because Catholic bishops don't want it covered, do they really want to go down that road? I mean, we would reach a point where nothing would be covered in insurance plans because there will be groups who will say it's morally objectionable. I mean, and again, I have to go back to the point that the majority of Catholic, not Catholic bishops, but the majority of Catholics at the street level agree with what the Obama administration is doing. And it really was sad, to get back to Joy's original point, that the U.S. Congress didn't even see fit to invite to their committee anyone who could speak to health issues on matters like this, especially women's health issues.
Let's take a call from David in Ironwood. Hello, David.
Yeah, I mean, people should be able to, religious organizations should not dictate what the U.S. government should and should not cover. I mean, if I belong to a religion that doesn't think blacks should have the equal rights, should that mean we need to disregard the rights of the blacks? I mean, it's crazy, you know. I mean,
all right. I guess, Keen, what do you say to that? That
nobody's taking away your right to birth control or to use it as a matter of conscience. But the question is for institutions who are morally opposed to that, should they have to pay for it as a matter of law?
Well, isn't the insurance company going to pay for it?
Look, if the insurance company pays for it, it's going to be built into your premiums. And that's such a disingenuous compromise. It will change the semantics, but it'll be the same thing.
So then aren't my premiums covering it?
Your premiums are covering it because no one's doing it for free.
So what's the problem with religious liberty?
Well, the problem is then you have religious institutions who are morally opposed to birth control, who believe that abstinence, and by the way, there's good reason to talk about abstinence. It's because if you know, my wife's, for example, a pharmacist, and she'll tell you that if you go through the effectiveness on any given birth control, there are very few that are even close to 100% effective. And that's often lost in this debate, but that's a debate for another day. What we should be focusing on here is whether an institution who's morally opposed to this should and could be forced to pay for it. Nobody's taking away the right to birth control. It's a question of who should pay for it. You have the right to buy it on your own, and it's not really that expensive.
Yeah. Well, Tony, yeah, anything further on this? We probably need to move on.
No, we can move on.
Well, I guess we have a caller who wants to talk about this. Jamie in New Richmond. Hello, Jamie.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I think that there's been so much discussion about this issue, and I don't hear a lot of people getting to the foundation of the issue. And one thing to think about is that the Catholic Church is kind of being set up as a favored group of people here, and they do have a very powerful voice, and I think that's the reason why. But the question is where the federal government gets the right to mandate anybody entering certain contractual agreements on either side. Now, I realize that they do that in about probably 50 million different ways with insurance and every other aspect of life, but in this situation, they're saying whether or not the Catholics will have to do this, and I'm saying, let's not worry about what the Catholics have to do, but how about any individual American being forced to buy, or any company being forced to issue a certain service?
All right, Tony.
Well, Jamie's asking a big question here. I think when you get back to the debate about health care in 2009, I think everybody across the board agreed health care has got to be made more affordable. Right. So one way of making it more affordable is people probably shouldn't have to pay for certain contraceptive devices. If they're paying their health premiums and so on, the contraception should come with that. So I think that's where we get to the government involvement, controlling costs for everyone. But the idea of the Catholic institution having this influence, I mean, when we say the institution, say the Catholic Church, who is the Catholic institution? It's Catholics. I mean, it's not just a small group of bishops who are going to determine what the U.S. government should do. It's Catholics at the street level who are saying in survey and poll after poll, they're okay with the president's policy.
Well, we should. Do you have anything keen on Jamie Scott?
Yeah.
All right, let's talk about the presidential race. Rick Santorum is leading in some polls, including in Michigan, the next primary, where Mitt Romney is a native son of Michigan. What's going on, Keen?
Well, I think what's going on is a political process, and I happen to be kind of wonky and a fan of campaigns and political processes. So I like a good primary. And what I will tell you is that a candidate can get their 15 or 20 minutes of fame from a debate, from a turn in the media coverage. The question is does that candidate have staying power? And we'll find out with Rick Santorum. And I think that's a good process that we go through and really have had a chance to get to know all of the people in the process a little bit better. And I think it's Rick Santorum's turn, and we'll see what happens with that. But, you know, if you think 4 years ago, you know, it was all about Hillary Clinton being a slam dunk at this time of year, and, you know, you see how that works out. I also think that campaigns are a wonderful learning process for candidates. If I was advising somebody for the assembly, here in the state, I'd say you should have started your campaign back in October so that you'd be well-practiced and have learned something by now, by the time we get to the county caucuses and Lincoln Day dinners. You know, otherwise, it's kind of too late. You'll just be fumbling around at a time when you should be letter perfect.
Mm-hmm. Tony.
Well, if you look at what's going on in the Republican primaries, the three candidates left standing, Romney, Santorum, and Gingrich, have three fairly big super PACs behind them. And I think without the super PAC, Mr. Santorum, former senator of Pennsylvania, may have been out of the race by now. The problem that I think Mitt Romney made as regards Michigan, which is coming up soon, is that, as on many other issues, he's been on various sides of it. And at some points, it seemed like he was supporting having the auto industry just go flat-out bankrupt, which, of course, is not going to be a very popular position in the state of Michigan, where the auto industry still employs quite a number of people. So I think the combination of big spending, super PACs, in Michigan, Mr. Romney making some real missteps, especially in the way that he approached the auto industry bailout. And, of course, the conservative base of voters are still not sold on Mitt Romney. He still needs to prove his credibility as a conservative. I do believe ultimately Mitt Romney will be the Republican nominee, but it's obviously turning out to be much, much more of a struggle for him than I think even he anticipated.
Yeah, do you think he's going to be the nominee, Keen?
I think it's going to head that way, but I wouldn't count Rick Santorum out. As a candidate, there's no perfect candidate. And it's hard to be all things to all people. And the campaign will teach you things about where you need to be, and you really need to be well-rounded. So we've talked about having super PACs in place. If you watched the news hour last night, there was an extensive discussion on essentially how you campaign by tweets, which is now a huge part of the sort of the continuous 24-hour news cycle, is to be able to be constantly tweeting. It is phenomenal that you have to know and do all those things, but I think it's a good proving ground for candidates, and so I'm happy with the process, and I expect people to make mistakes and stumble, but ultimately and that process will produce a tougher, more well-rounded candidate.
I wanted to ask you, too, Keene and Tony, yesterday, one of the top stories in the news yesterday was GM apparently made record profits and all sorts of stories on how GM is back on the road to, you know, fiscal health and everything's great. And that Keene, I mean, it sounds like the bailout was a big success.
In many ways, people complain about the bailouts, but first of all, the government is and will make money on TARP, which is the bailout of the banks, which is probably the most hated portion of that. I think the auto jury is still out on the auto industry in terms of the amount of stock that we own there, but it does seem, it's been now more than a year since Ford turned the corner, and that was a company that wasn't necessarily bailed out, and we're hoping that GM will do good, but they didn't necessarily do very well on Wall Street because they didn't make analyst expectations. So there was a back and forth about, well, it was best ever, but yet it was still what we consider underperformance for expectations. The jury's still out on GM stock, and I'm not rushing out to buy any soon.
Tony.
Well, I mean, it's a clear example of where the Obama administration took a huge risk on this, and it seems now to be paying some dividends for them, and it's throwing the Republicans into fits because, I think they were anticipating there'd be a much, much different result. So now the president is looking very strong in Michigan as a result of this policy, and it's kind of ironic for Mitt Romney because he does have Michigan roots. His father was a governor of Michigan in the 60s. And now he's really backpedaling on things that he said. I mean, there were points a couple of years ago where he was overtly calling for bankruptcy of the auto companies, and now he's having to step back from that. But, one other thing, Joy, slightly off the topic here, a bigger problem Mitt Romney has is he had essentially a moderate record as governor of Massachusetts. I think most objective observers would say not a bad record. He worked with Democrats and so on. But in the Republican primaries, the modern Republican primaries will not allow him to frame his record as governor as a positive one. I think if he can survive the primaries, I think his record as governor will be more favorable to independent voters who ultimately swing these elections. So, the key is, will at some point, will Mitt Romney be able to come out and say, something, I was a pretty good governor of Massachusetts, or will he have to keep running away from it?
Yeah. We need to, let me touch on one international issue that's getting some coverage in the news this week. It's about Israel and Iran. Israel is accusing Iran of being responsible for assassination attempts around the world. Iran made claims about its nuclear program, which are being dismissed by the U.S. and Israel. There's escalating tensions here, lots of talk about whether, this covert war that might be going on already between Israel and Iran. Keene Winters, how concerned are you about this?
Well, I am concerned. I think in the long run, you have an Islamic theocracy that wants to expand itself and project itself over the entire globe. And so they found a way to engage in asymmetric warfare using terrorism and surrogates. And while I think there is intelligence that their nuclear program is still reasonably primitive, the notion that this network and this government might have nuclear material, which it could use in either a dirty bomb or a regular bomb, and essentially try and distribute through a clandestine network and then disclaim the results, is really a pretty frightening scenario. So I think there's reason to be concerned, and this really needs to be a focal point of foreign policy.
Mm-hmm. Tony?
Ahmadinejad, the president, will be out of office in 2013. Iran has term limits for their presidents. I think if we can hopefully avoid any kind of invasion, any kind of war, whether by the U.S., Israel, or anybody else, in 2013, there will be a very interesting election season in Iran because there is a strong reformist element in Iran, those who want to work more cooperatively with the West, if you will. I think a huge mistake would be if there's something that happens before that. But it is disturbing, because just reading the international press and whatnot, it does look like there are elements that are determined to start conflict over there. And obviously it could mushroom into a broader Mideast war, which would be just a horrible for civilians. Obviously civilians are always the big losers in every war. So I'm hoping that cooler heads prevail, and that we can make sure Iran is letting in atomic weapon inspectors, and that we can be supportive of reformist elements in Iran who want to build more bridges with the West.
Tony Palmieri is a professor of communication at UW-Oshkosh, media columnist for the Scene newspaper in the Fox Valley. And Keen Winters is a financial planner in Schofield and coordinator of the Center-Right Coalition of Wausau. Our two guests today for this edition of the Week in Review. We will have our Week in Review quiz question and talk about state issues in the news this week coming up. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Time for the Week in Review quiz. Well, as we discussed earlier, President Obama visited Milwaukee on Wednesday to tout Master Lock for insourcing jobs. Governor Walker greeted him at the airport with a Brewers jersey that featured Obama's name on the back and the number one. Today's question: which Milwaukee Brewers player actually wears number one? 1-800-642-1234 if you would like to guess, if you'd like to play. 1-800-642-1234. We'll give you 5 minutes to call in your guesses, and we will randomly select a winner from all of the correct answers, and you will win a fabulous book that was featured on the program sometime recently. So, which Milwaukee Brewers player actually wears number one? And here's a hint. You can think Valentine's Day. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Okay, we'll announce the answer and the winner at the end of the program. This is the Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine, talking with Keen Winters and Tony Palmieri about all the top news stories of the week. Let's talk about state issues. There was a real surprising twist in the effort to pass new mining legislation this week. A Senate committee, the Select Committee on Mining, introduced its version of the mining bill earlier this week. It was different than the Assembly bill that had passed a couple of weeks ago. Some modifications were added to try to appease some of the criticisms of the bill. But then we learned that the Senate Majority Leader, Scott Fitzgerald, disbanded the committee. He dissolved the committee, and Scott Fitzgerald and eight other lawmakers signed on to the Assembly version of the bill, and this bill was then sent to Joint Finance. The Joint Finance Committee is holding a hearing, in fact, today in about an hour or so at the state capitol. Instead of a hearing being held in Platteville today on the Senate version of the bill, or in Ashland next week on the Senate version of the bill, Joint Finance is holding a hearing today on the Assembly version of the bill. Now, I hope you followed all that, but Tony Palmieri, this surprised a lot of people.
Well, you know, thank goodness for Republican Senator Dale Schultz in the Senate, who has announced already he's not going to support this Assembly version of the bill. And it goes to show you how important those recall elections were, because the Republicans only have a 17-16 majority in the Senate. So if Dale Schultz doesn't vote with it, it doesn't happen. I support the view of former DNR Secretary George Meyer, who says that our current mining laws are fine, and that the direction that the legislature is going in is simply, you know, potentially putting our environment at great risk over this. So what, if I had to predict, I would say that ultimately Senator Schultz will craft some kind of compromise. Will he get Republicans to sign on to it before the session ends? in March is anyone's guess.
I want to know, Tony, do you have any idea why would Senate Majority Leader Fitzgerald do this?
Well, I mean, clearly they were working on a bill that was highly supportive of the industry. Schultz, I think, is alone in the Senate as saying we need something that's more in tune with environmental concerns and a wider range of issues. I mean, this whole process, the way you described it, Joy, is so par for the course of what we've been dealing with in this state since Governor Walker and the Republicans took the control of government in 2010. Shut down public hearings the moment you don't hear what you want to hear. Shut down a committee the moment it doesn't toe the party line. I mean, it's very disturbing, and I think very contemptuous of basic principles of openness and transparency.
Yeah, Keene Winters, what's your take on this?
Well, I think the take on it is we've got to get something done, and as part of politics, people who don't like things engage in delaying tactics and drag things out. Minnesota does mining. Michigan does mining. There are certainly model laws out there that we can follow and get this done. But if you look at sort of the economies in places like Iron County, I mean, Iron County is going to, if things continue the way it is, it's essentially going to depopulate, and that has wide-ranging implications for things like maintaining a school system. There's some pretty serious hurt going on up there, and there's an opportunity to get jobs. We should also talk that iron mining isn't the copper mining that we had in the past. Copper mining requires chemicals to extract the copper, whereas iron mining, iron is magnetic. You can generally just pull it out without using chemicals. There's an impatience with the constant delay of getting this done, and I think you've seen that impatience rear its head here. And hopefully we'll have a compromise and get some stuff done soon so that we can get on to the business of creating jobs.
Yeah, we'll have more on this in our state capitol report on Monday between 7 and 8. I think we have a Republican state senator, Frank Lessay, joining us from 7:30 until 8 to talk about the mining legislation from his perspective. There was a federal court ruling yesterday, three judges, who really slammed Republicans over the redistricting issue. The federal court ruled that Republicans had to release emails and other documents related to their redistricting plan, the new legislative boundaries. The judges said that the efforts to keep these documents secret were, quote, a shameful attempt to hide the redistricting process from public scrutiny. And, Tony, what do you make of this?
Yeah, and I think two of those three judges were Republican appointees, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. I mean, again, as I suggested earlier, Joy, it's par for the course, just a contempt for openness, a contempt for transparency, trying to hide politicking behind the shield of attorney-client privilege. And, I think the cooler heads in the Republican Party, and Keene sounds like one of them to me, I hope they start asking, what has happened to our party? How did we get to this point where everything becomes about secrets, everything becomes about power, everything becomes about narrow special interests? Why not just do the business of the people in open and in public? Yes, I know Democrats have done similar things in the past. We all know that. But this is so blatant and so contemptuous of basic democratic transparency principles that I really think it's time for not just Democrats, but even cooler heads in the Republican Party to stand up and say, we got to change the way we're doing business right now.
Yeah. Does this trouble you, Keene?
Probably not as much as Tony, but I think that I've heard the explanation prior to this. Is that people in the Republican Party figured this would end up in court anyhow, so the idea was then essentially don't make a lot of public statements because they can be used against you in court. And that may have been a misguided strategy, although the notion that you prepare for a court fight in this litigious world And it's tough. Governing is tough, Tony. And sometimes you to get things done, you have to move ahead and anticipate the lawsuit, do the best you can. And I don't know that I would have advised people to do something differently, although it would be nicer if there is some more openness in the process.
Well, I'll tell you, the moment elected officials start signing pledges to secrecy, that is a road that no elected official should ever go down.
But now we have most Democrats signing a pledge that they'll do nothing with our government until collective bargaining rights are restored. So you should ask yourself, what's happened to the Democratic Party? Are there any Democrats left?
Yeah, you and I can agree, Keene. It's a bad idea for people to sign pledges that
I agree.
Agree
with that.
Whether it's Norquist or anyone else.
There was also the state Senate approved a sweeping legislation that would ease restrictions over development on or near wetlands. But the Senate reconvened at midnight on Wednesday to take this up, so it was passed at midnight.
Yeah.
Anything wrong with that, Keene?
No, there's nothing wrong with working until midnight. The core of wetlands, the wetlands program, is that, you know, we've lost half our wetlands since the state was settled, and that we have put in place a wetlands mitigation process that as we do development, we should then, for every acre of wetlands that we destroy, create 1.2 acres of new wetlands. And that process was really stuck. It was stuck by the definitions. It was stuck by arguing over a portion of a farm field, which during a wet year retains water, even though it's been under cultivation for many, many years. It was stuck by a DNR that has really run by district and is different from district to district in Wisconsin, and so you couldn't move mitigation from one place to another. We needed to get that process unstuck, because the fruits of getting that unstuck are more economic development and more wetlands, and that's both a good thing.
Quickly, Tony, since we're almost out of time.
Our legislature, especially the Republicans these days, it's just short-term, narrow, special interest thinking. You harm your wetlands excessively, you're harming the future of your children and grandchildren. We can't have public policy that operates that way. At the very least, you have to have a much more expanded public hearing process before you pass legislation like that.
Time for us to reveal the answer and the winner of our Week in Review quiz. Diane in Racine, congratulations, you're the winner. She correctly answered that the Milwaukee Brewers player that wears number one is Corey Hart. So Corey Hart's the answer, and Diane, you'll get one of the books of your choice that we featured on the program recently. The last time the president was here, Governor Walker gave him a Packers jersey. By the way, pitchers and catchers report to spring training on Monday in Arizona. So, Keene and Tony, this is a surprise question for you. What gift would you have given President Obama? Tony, quickly.
Probably some cheese. I'm not sure what brand, though.
There we go.
And I agree. Cheese and wine are my favorite wedding gifts, because I know people don't return them. They just use them.
That's right. It's hard to return those. Sounds good. Well, we'll have much more on state issues and other news coming up on Monday in our state capitol report between 7 and 8. Thanks very much, Keene and Tony, for being with us today.
Thank you very much.
You.
Tony Palmieri, professor of communications at UW-Oshkosh and media columnist for the Scene newspaper in the Fox Valley. Keene Winters, financial planner in Schofield, coordinator of the Center-Right Coalition of Wausau. Thanks very much to Rob Ferret and to Bill Martins for producing this hour. I hope you stay tuned. There's much more to come. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.